Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Focus Weekly Discipleship Podcast. My name is Kevin Rognes, and I'm the Discipleship Director here at Faith Covenant Church. Thank you for watching or for listening today, and make sure you subscribe and leave us a review. That just helps us to know how we're doing. And then if there's anything that you want to cover, any stories you want to share, any questions you want us to tackle on the podcast, I would love to hear about that. So my email address is listed in the show notes down below. So check that out and send me what you want us to cover, because I want to tailor this podcast to you and what your needs are. So today I'm going to do something that I've done quite a few times before on the podcast and just share some things that I'm learning in Scripture. My role as discipleship director is just to help people be disciple-making disciples, and part of that is just sharing what we learn in Scripture. Sometimes it's really just as straightforward as that. It's just sharing how Scripture is affecting us and changing us. Oftentimes we make that into a really stressful thing and make it something that sounds scary and difficult, but it really does not have to be that. It can be simple and straightforward, just talking about what God has done in our lives and what we're learning as we read Scripture. And as I share today about some of these things, I deliberately decided not to use any outside resources. All I'm going on is just reading the Bible and just kind of thinking through it, asking questions, wondering about the story that we're going to look at today. I'll kind of say where I started to kind of look at some study notes and stuff like that, but I decided, no, I want this just to be about what we see in Scripture on its own. We don't have to make it complicated. We can keep it really straightforward and just look at how is God speaking to me, what questions am I having as I engage with this piece of the Bible. So, with that said, let's just jump right in to this particular story, which is in John 6, the very beginning of John 6. And this is the story, the infamous story of Jesus feeding the crowd of 5,000 people. And it should be said that this is saying there were 5,000 men. That's what it says in the Bible, which means likely there were a bunch of women and children who weren't counted, which means the crowd was probably much, much bigger, maybe 10 to 15 to 20,000 or more, maybe. We don't really know. Regardless, it was a very big crowd. So let's just jump right in and start doing this, because this was something I was just looking at last night, and it got me thinking. So let's just jump in. So John 6, I'm going to start off at verse 1. After this, Jesus crossed the Red Sea, or the Sea of Galilee, or Tiberias. A huge crowd was following him because they saw the signs that he was performing by healing the sick. Jesus went up a mountain and sat down there with his disciples. Now the Passover, a Jewish festival, was near. So, when Jesus looked up and noticed a huge crowd coming toward him, he asked Philip, "Where will we buy bread so these people can eat?" He asked this to test him, for he himself knew what he was going to do. So right away from the start, I'm very curious about, why does Jesus choose Philip? We never really get an answer to this, but right away I'm like, why is Philip being tested in this way? Was Philip in special need of a moment of special attention? I don't know. It just kind of gets me wondering. So that's kind of the first question I start asking. But I love that right in there in the end of verse 6, Jesus knows what's about to happen, but he still asks the question of Philip. He sees this as an opportunity to test Philip. So Jesus knows what he's about to do, and those of us who are familiar with the story know what Jesus is about to do. But he asks Philip that question with the purpose of testing Philip. That then kind of leads to my next question of, okay, what is the test of Philip? And we'll come back to that. But so Jesus asks Philip, where are we going to buy bread? So if Jesus asks a very specific question, where are we going to buy bread? Not how, where. Where are we going to get this bread from? So we'll pick up now in chapter 6, verse 7. Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread wouldn't be enough for each of them to have a little. So Philip is saying, this sum of money, this presumably big sum of money, isn't enough to even give people a little bit. So he's saying, we don't really have much resources. So even if we had a spot to buy bread, we don't have enough money to get a lot of bread for this many people. Now, Philip's not wrong in this. Philip's not answering the question incorrectly, and he's very much asking the question that Jesus asked. Jesus says, where are we going to get this bread? And Philip says, we don't have enough money to buy enough bread for a crowd this large. So he's not wrong. We don't know exactly why he chose the sum of money that he chose, the 200 denarii. The text doesn't say why he mentioned that amount of money. My guess, and this is just a guess, but my guess is that that's what they had available to them. When they pooled their resources or people had donated to Jesus' ministry, my guess is that's what they had available to them at that moment was 200 denarii. And Philip's looking at that amount of money, and he's saying, we have this, but that's not going to go very far in feeding this massive crowd. So Philip, again, is answering the question that is being asked very specifically. And he's being very practical. And so it's not necessarily that Philip has a lack of faith in this answer. He's answering Jesus very directly. And so I don't think that it's fair of us to say that Philip isn't giving a faithful response. But I started to wonder last night, I was like, maybe Philip is lacking in imagination because he's answering the question very directly, but he doesn't have a lot of imagination for what is possible if this is the Son of God. At this point, Philip had seen Jesus do some pretty incredible things, but here he's not expressing a lot of imagination for what Jesus might do. He's thinking about the available resources and what those resources can be used for, something I think we all would do. I certainly would do that in that situation. And he isn't wrong. Philip isn't wrong in saying this amount of money will not go very far. And we'll see in a moment here, in this story, Philip is never rebuked or chastised. So I don't think the text is really telling us that Philip answered incorrectly in any way. But I wonder if he was lacking in imagination. So let's go on. Let's look at verses 8 and 9 now of chapter 6. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There's a boy here that has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they for so many?" So Andrew's answer here is really interesting. In part because nobody was talking to him. Jesus wasn't saying, "Philip and Andrew, weigh in on this question." Jesus asked Philip. But Andrew kind of inserts his own thoughts here, and he's interjecting into the conversation about another resource that's available. He's saying, "Hey, there's this little kid here. He's got a little bit of food, but it's not very much. I don't know what we're going to do with this, but hey, we have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. I don't know what to do with that, but it's something else that's available to us." So this isn't an answer that Jesus asked for. Jesus didn't say, "Do we have any food available already?" Jesus asked, "Where are we going to buy food?" Philip answered, "We don't have enough money to buy food." And Andrew butts in and says, "Here's what little food we have, but it's not enough." We kind of get the idea that Andrew's kind of saying, "I don't know why I'm saying anything here, but here's some food. It's not enough." So why does Andrew do this? I don't think we really know, but I wonder if he says that because he has a little bit of imagination. I don't think Andrew knows what's going on here. He certainly doesn't know what Jesus is about to do, but he says, and again, this is not an answer to a question that was asked, but he says, "Here's something. Do something with this little bit of food that we have. Here's something." So he's not suggesting where they could get food. Philip or Andrew is not suggesting where they could get some money. He's not addressing what Jesus asked or what Philip answered. He's bringing up something a little bit different. Andrew is starting to brainstorm a little bit. He's starting to offer solutions to the problem at hand of how are we going to feed all of these people. He's starting to brainstorm a little bit and starting to express maybe just a little bit of faithful imagination. And again, Andrew has no idea what Jesus is about to do. So then what does Jesus do? So we pick up in verse 10, and we'll read 10 through 13 here of chapter 6. Jesus said, "Have the people sit down. There is plenty of grass in that place." So they sat down. The men numbered about 5,000. Then Jesus took the loaves, and after giving thanks, he distributed to them to those who were seated. So also with the fish, as much as they wanted. When they were full, he told his disciples, "Collect the leftovers so that nothing is wasted." So they collected and filled 12 oh my goodness, that's a big spider. So for those of you who are just listening and not watching, a giant, maybe not giant spider, but a spider just came down in front of me while I was reading scripture. So let me continue back at verse 12. When they were full, he told his disciples, "Collect the leftovers so that nothing is wasted." So they collected them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces from the 5 barley loaves that were left over by those who had eaten. So Jesus took that little tiny bit of food that would not have gone very far, but he brought up that little tiny food that Andrew brought up, and with a little bit of imagination, created a tremendous abundance. It didn't just meet the need, it exceeded the need, so much so that Jesus said, "We have all of this food, collect this and put it together so that nothing gets wasted. We have more for later." So Jesus provided way more than was necessary. Now, let's go back to the original test, the original question that Jesus asked back in verses 5 and 6. Jesus asked, "Hey, Philip, where are we going to get the bread?" And that was the initial test that Philip was given. So, again, what was the test? We're not entirely sure. We're not really given the results of the test. We don't know how Philip was graded on the test or what was Philip's response to this test. We don't really know. I kind of wonder, though, if the test was not a test of faith, but rather a test of imagination. Was Jesus testing Philip to see if Philip had any sort of imagination for what might happen? What might Jesus do in this situation to fulfill this need to feed such a large, large crowd? And I think sometimes having faith means having imagination, which maybe seems kind of weird because sometimes faith is something that we want to be tangible. We know that God will do things, and so it sometimes feels like faith has to be a form of certainty. And imagination is sometimes us making up things on our own, and that can be spiritually dangerous in some ways. We don't want to imagine things inappropriately. But at the same time, when I see Andrew's response, Andrew seems to have a little bit of faithful imagination. Now, our imagination may not, and probably rarely will ever get it right. Oftentimes we have no idea how God is going to work or how God is going to move. But like Andrew, I think we can have a little bit of imagination, even if we don't get it right. I think it's good for us to wonder and to imagine what God might do in a situation. Do we have a faithful imagination? Can we faithfully imagine that, hey, here's this big problem in front of me. Here's this big obstacle. Here's the situation that I don't know how to get through. Can I imagine how God is going to do it? I'm probably not going to imagine the right answer. And there's a danger that I might choose a way of imagining things that I then get obsessed with and then assume that God can only work that way. That's not healthy. But I do think it is healthy to imagine what God might do. When we imagine what God can do, that builds our faith. When we are stuck in a situation and we need a solution, when we just start to imagine that, hey, maybe God could do this, or maybe God could do this completely other thing, or maybe God will do this, that starts to build our faith. That starts the journey of us saying, hey, I don't know how God is going to do this, but I'm starting to imagine that God might actually do this. what if God does it this way? What if God does it that way? Wouldn't that be amazing? And sure enough, God tends to come through on those things, oftentimes not in the way that we guessed or in the way that we imagined. And again, we don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole of assuming that God is going to work in the specific way that we imagine. That's not always healthy. But we don't have to correctly guess what God will do. But when we engage our imagination a little bit, I think it increases our faith in what God can do in a situation. I recently experienced this a little bit in my own life. Many of you know that I run with Team World Vision to raise money for clean water projects. And in the week before the last marathon that I was doing, I was getting closer to my goal, my fundraising goal of how much money I wanted to raise for clean water projects, but I was still a couple thousand dollars short of that goal with like a week left before the race. And I imagined how God was going to do it. And I said, okay, I think God is going to do it this way. And then what I imagined didn't end up happening. But then God did something else. And so I started imagining something else entirely. And then that didn't end up happening. But then I started imagining something else. And it didn't happen that way. But then God did something else yet again. And by the end of the week, the day before the race, sure enough, God brought the fundraising to meet the goal that I had set or that God had set. And it was not the way that I imagined that it was going to happen. But that process of me imagining different ways that God might do it slowly throughout the week began to increase my faith that, hey, maybe God is really going to do this. And I certainly had my doubts. When the thing that I imagined didn't end up happening early in the week, then my faith went down. But then God had me imagining again, like, well, what if this happened? And then that didn't quite happen the way I thought. And so then my kind of faith decreased again. But every time my imagination kind of perked up, so did my faith. So imagination, I think, is a really important part of faith, which maybe seems a little weird to us. Sometimes we think that imagination is just the realm for kids to play in. But we are told to have a childlike faith. And I think a childlike faith involves our imagination. So I want you to think about that. And if you have any thoughts about what that might look like or what that has looked like in your life, let me know. I'd love to hear about that. So I hope that you can practice that, a little bit of faithful imagination sometime this week. If you're facing some problem and you know that you need God's help to get through it, just start imagining what that might look like. And I think that you'll find that your faith maybe grows a little bit in some way. And don't worry if it doesn't turn out the way that you imagine. That's okay. We're not going to get it right when we imagine what God can do. But I think imagining what God can do expands the box that we think God will act in. So, those are my thoughts for today. Thank you so much for watching and for listening. Have a wonderful and blessed day.